Welcome to Rapidly Rotating Records number 1337. An hour of toe-tapping music from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s with yours truly, Glenn Robison. We've got dance bands, hot bands, sweet bands, show tunes, novelty tunes, blues, jazz, and more on everything from Aeolian to Xenophone and by everyone from Aronson to Zerke. On this week's show, Frank Munn gets his own birthday segment. In other segments, we'll go fishing, churn some butter, do some marching, and have an anatomy lesson. Quite some time ago, I bought Rita a 42-gallon curved front aquarium as a Christmas present. It served us well, and over the years we've had just about every kind of freshwater tropical fish, and even some snails, which are fascinating to watch. Unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, a brace at the top of the aquarium failed, causing the glass to bow slightly and preventing the cover from closing properly. That seemed a little precarious, and we decided to replace the tank. We settled on a taller but narrower 45-gallon model with its own stand, but then, of course, came the immense task of switching out the aquaria. It took about 4 hours, but we got it done without losing any of our ichthyic friends. So, with apologies to the fish for the major disruption, here's a set of rapidly rotating records about fish.
Thank you. Thank you.
Candy and Coco with the Kingfish Blues on Vocalion 2833, recorded in Los Angeles on September 19, 1934. Candy and Coco were bassist and sometime vocalist Jonathan Candy Candido and guitarist Otto Coco Heimel. This was an instrumental, but they were often joined by crooner Gene Austin, known for their close harmonies and described as the hottest boys this side of Hades. They made their screen debut in the 1934 MGM picture Sadie McKee, starring Joan Crawford, and also appeared with W.C. Fields and Mae West in My Little Chickadee. Before Candy and Coco were Jelly Roll Morton's Kings of Jazz with Fishtail Blues on Autograph 78, number 606, recorded around September of 1924. The Kings of Jazz were Lee Collins on cornet, Roy Palmer trombone, saxophonist Alex Poole, and clarinetist Balls Ball, whose real name I tried unsuccessfully to find. The Autograph label was founded by electrical engineer Orlando Marsh and made the first electrical recordings with microphones in 1924. Autograph's most famous recordings were by Jelly Roll Morton and King Oliver, but their best-selling records were a series of pipe organ recordings by Jesse Crawford. We started this ichthyic set with Furman and Nash asking, "Hey, you want any codfish? We only got mackerel today." The label of Columbia A3954, made July 12, 1923, gives composer credit to "I'm a Fish" and "You're a Herring."
That's silly.
Yes, yes it is. Furman and Nash were the vocal duo of Eddie Furman and William Nash, who made 22 sides for Columbia, primarily novelty songs and blues. I'm Glenn Robison, and you and I are listening to Rapidly Rotating Records, bringing you vintage music to which you can't not tap your toes from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s. Oleomargarine was invented in 1869 by Hippolyte Mesmerez in response to a challenge by Emperor Napoleon III to create a butter substitute out of beef fat for consumption by the armed forces and the lower classes. Soon many companies were manufacturing margarine using various methods and formulations. In 1930s Germany, chemist Arthur Imhausen found a way to make margarine out of coal.
What?
Yeah, coal. Adolf Hitler was a hardcore vegetarian and ate only margarine, so despite the fact that Imhausen was a Jew, he received money and support from the Nazis. Hitler and Goering were thrilled with the invention, made Imhausen an honorary Aryan, and he received two of Germany's highest military medals. He survived the Third Reich and died in 1951, but his company survives to this day, still making oleochemical products, but presumably not from coal. Today's vegetable spreads may be less unhealthy, but in this house, we consume only butter. Real butter. And so, here's a set of rapidly rotating records about... that's right, butter. Thank you.
She done the shimmy, she wobbled right across the hall. She made a misstep, you might have seen a fall. It was dirty, but I...
I gave you my toys, Butterfingers, you let my toys slip through your fingers and break. When we were 10, Butterfingers, I gave you my books, Butterfingers, they slipped right through your hand and fell in the lake. When we were 17, you still were callous, but I loved you so. Though I knew that you were callous, I couldn't let you go. At 21, Butterfingers, I gave you my heart. Butterfingers, you let my heart slip through your fingers and break.
Butterfingers was written by Irving Berlin and first recorded by Don Bester with Neil Buckley, but we just heard Adrian Rollini and his orchestra with the vocal refrain by Joey Nash on Vocalion 2672, recorded March 24, 1934. Before that, being heard on the show for the first time, Minnie Wallace with her composition Dirty Butter, recorded in Memphis, Tennessee, September 23, 1929. They're not credited on the label of Victor V38547, but Minnie Wallace was accompanied by members of the Memphis Jug Band. In 1920s slang, dirty butter refers to insincere, excessive flattery, or fawning praise. We started the set with Kaplan's Melodists, Edison's house band directed by pianist Dave Kaplan, with Some Sweet Butter, written by Irving Cohn. That was recorded October 18, 1923, at the Edison Studios in the Knickerbocker Building on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. This being the first day of March, what do you say we have a set of marches?
Thank you. Mr. Eastbound Jackson was going to wed, so he hired a big brass band. While coming out of the church, he said, play that wedding march so grand. While waiting for his bride so sweet, he learned to his dismay that his very best man, whose name was Pete, had stolen his gal away. Mr. Jackson walked outside and to the leader cried, cancel that wedding march and play a funeral dirge right now. 'Cause when I see that gal and her yaller pal, the show will be some row. I'm gonna carve him like a Christmas fowl. There'll be a massacre. So cancel that wedding march and play a funeral dirge for me. Jackson got an invite to please attend a recital. Well, of course he went. And the very first person he saw was his lady friend. And then came Pete, this missing gent. The organ played that wedding tune. It surely was very, very bad taste. Because the party broke up right soon. Three people, they left in great haste. Mr. Jackson's gal was in the lead, and these words just lent her speed. Cancel that wedding march and play a funeral dirge right now. 'Cause when I see that gal and her yaller pal, the show will be some row. I'm gonna scrap my pep. Believe me, it ain't no gilet. There'll be a massacre. So cancel that wedding march and play a funeral dirge for me. Thank you.
Australian pianist and composer Percy Grainger with his composition, The Gumsuckers March, on Columbia A3381, recorded February 5, 1921. Gumsucker is an Australian nickname for Australians born in Victoria, Grainger's home state. Before Percy Grainger was American vaudeville singer Gene Green with Ted Snyder's tune, Cancel That Wedding March, on Victor 5853, made April 20, 1911. American percussionist William Henry Wrights started things off with Victor Herbert's El Dorado March. He tried it a couple of times on October 17, 1913, with no luck, but came back to the studio on November 10th and got it right on take 3, issued on Victor 18085. I'm Glenn Robison, and the show is Rapidly Rotating Records. Last week, February 27th, marked the birth in 1894 in the Bronx of Frank Munn to George H. Munn, a policeman, and Frances Ray Kugler. His mother died when he was 9 years old, leaving him to be raised by his father and a grandmother. He attended city grammar schools until age 14, when he left school to support the family and got a job in an embroidery factory, earning $3 a week. In the evenings, he enjoyed singing with friends, but with no thought of making it a career, never learned to read music. To make a little extra money, Frank entered local singing contests, and in 1912 won a gold watch at the McKinley Square Theater. From there, he sang in minstrel shows and dance clubs, learning songs and technique by listening to recordings of John McCormick and other ballad singers. While working as a machinist in a shipyard turbine plant, his right index finger got caught in a lathe, keeping him from working for more than a year. This forced Munn to try to make a full-time living in show business by auditioning for recording companies and taking a few free lessons from vocal teacher Dudley Buck. Eventually, Munn was able to get a job with Studebaker as a mechanic and shuttle driver. Radio stations were popping up in the early 1920s looking for amateur musicians to fill airtime, and Munn made appearances on WEAF, WOR, and WJZ. His first phonograph recording was Old Pal, made for Brunswick on December 16, 1924. Munn was soon the star of dozens of radio programs, including the Palmolive Hour, where he sang under the pseudonym of Paul Oliver and earned the nickname the Golden Voice of Radio. In 1931, he became the lead vocalist for NBC Radio, where he remained until his retirement in 1945. Frank Munn died unexpectedly on October 1, 1953, while visiting his brother-in-law in Queens, where he's buried in Woodlawn Cemetery. Here are three from Frank Munn.
Thank you.
your two lips to kiss my cares away. My heart is hoping a sweetheart will come along someday. I want someone to cuddle up and call me baby, and after that maybe a wedding in May. Where are those tulips? I'm looking for tulips to kiss my cares away. It can right most any wrong. It can cheer us when we're broken-hearted. But the greatest song we sing is a love song that can bring someone near us even though we're parted. Sing a little love song when the skies are gray. Any little love song drives the clouds away. As an inspiration, watch the birds above. You'll find consolation in their song of love. What good are riches and gold when love is true? We know from stories of old just what a song can do. Sing a little love song, sorrow will depart. Keep a little love song ringing in your heart.
Thank you. never knew when breezes blew what a summer breeze would say. I never knew that dreams came true and took your cares away. I never knew what love could do until I met you
Frank Munn, backed by the Regent Club Orchestra with I Never Knew, written by Gus Kahn and Ted Fiorito. Brunswick 2979 was recorded December 1, 1925. The Regent Club Orchestra was a Brunswick studio band, active between May of 1925 and November of 1931. It had several directors over the years, beginning with Gus Henschen, whom Frank Munn credited with most of his success on records and radio. Sing a Little Love Song was written by Archie Gottler, Sidney Mitchell, and Con Conrad, and heard in Carl Laemmle's stupendous talking and singing picture, Broadway. I've played it by Paul Specht, Smith Ballou, and Don Howard with Nat Schilkert's orchestra. But before I Never Knew, you heard Frank Munn's rendition on Edison Diamond Disc, 52603, recorded May 31st, 1929. Two Lips was written by Billy Rose and Harry Warren, and I've played it several times by Al Friedman's orchestra, but we started our little tribute to Frank Munn with his interpretation on Victor 21615, recorded August 10th, 1928. As you know, Rita and I are big fans of Jeopardy, and whenever we're watching, I have pen and paper ready to take notes should a new-to-me word come up during the show. And such was the case a couple of weeks ago, when the Jeopardy answer was, it's the prominent bony tip of the elbow formed by the upper end of the ulna. The Jeopardy question, what is the olecranon? The first known use of the word olecranon was in 1578, but while we're on the topic of elbows, I'd like to submit my own Jeopardy answer to the show's producers. It's the loose flap of skin underneath the human elbow. The Jeopardy question? What's the weenus?
What? What's that? What?
No, weenus. W-E-N-I-S. A word from 1990s slang. Now, I wouldn't have taken the bet that I could come up with an elbow segment, but here we go.
1,200 miles its length and breadth before square cities stand. Its gem-set walls of jasper shine, not made with human hand. 100 miles its gates are wide, abundance entrance there. With 50 miles of elbow room on either side to spare. When the gates swing wide on the other side, just beyond the sunset sea, there'll be room to spare as we enter there. Room for you and room for me. For the gates are wide on the other. miles of elbow room. Sometimes I'm cramped and crowded here and long for elbow room. I want to reach for altitude where fire flowers bloom. It won't be long till I shall pace into that city fair. Wide on the other side, just beyond the sunset sea, there'll be room to spare as we enter there. Room for you and room for me, for the gates are wide on the other side, where the flowers ever bloom. On the right hand, on the left hand, 50 miles of elbow room. Thank you.
In 1926, Billy Merrill wrote four pieces which he collected under the title Piano Exaggerations. We heard his recording of the first of them, Loose Elbows, on British Columbia 3926 from March 3, 1926. Before Billy Merrill were the Flanagan brothers, button accordionist Joe, banjo player Mike, and guitarist Lewis, one of the most popular and prolific Irish recording groups of the 78 RPM era. We heard a medley of Irish reels, The Maid That Left the County, and More Power to Your Elbows. That's from Vocalion 14804, released in 1924. The exclamative phrase, more power to your elbow, is an expression of approval or support for a person who is engaged in an activity that the speaker regards as praiseworthy. And, of course, the first activity involving the elbow that comes to mind is tipping back a pint of Guinness. We started this Olecranon set with the Carter family and their 273rd record, made in their 38th recording session at Victor's Studio 2 in New York City. That was 50 Miles of Elbow Room on Bluebird B9026, made October 14, 1941. Sarah Carter gets composer credit on the record, but the song was actually written by Herbert Duffum, a Pentecostal evangelist in California who claimed to have written thousands of gospel songs. The phrase 50 miles of elbow room refers metaphorically to an immense heavenly space in the afterlife where there is absolute freedom, complete peace, and limitless room to exist without being crowded or restricted. Yeah, well, okay. I'm Glenn Robison, and I'm very pleased that you've chosen to spend this past hour with me listening to Rapidly Rotating Records. I hope you'll click in or tune in again next week, and as always, I thank you for your very kind attention.